Thank you, Chonga, and blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Monday, March 16th, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri.
Here are our top stories this evening.
More than 10,000 workers in Zimbabwe state universities downed their tools in protest over the government's failure to pay February salaries and outstanding 2014 bonuses.
We have spoken to the other universities. They've actually addressed their staff, the representatives there, which they have confirmed that staff have dismissed, they've gone home. They are waiting for their salaries while they are in their homes.
The lawyers representing human rights activist and freelance journalist Itai Dzamara are tomorrow expected to start visiting all official police and prison holding cells as the search for the missing activist intensifies.
We are referring to those constitutional places where people may be detained after they have been arrested, like police cells, prison cells, and the other prescribed detention cells, like court holding cells.
And Michael Cariati tells us why Highlanders and Dynamos fans are smiling.
More than 10,000 workers in Zimbabwe state universities downed their tools and stayed at home today following the government's failure to pay February salaries and outstanding 2014 bonuses. Reid Ford Dube, president of the Zimbabwe Universities and Allied Workers Union, tells Studio 7 all academic and non-academic staff withdrew their services early this morning, forcing the universities to ground to a halt. Dube says they will only go back to work if their grievances are met, though government officials informed them last Friday that there's no money to pay them.
Senior officials at several state universities refused to comment and referred all questions to the ministries of higher education and finance. Higher Education Minister Opam Chinguri and Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa were not available for comment as they were not responding to calls on their mobile phones. Dube told Studio 7's Gibbs Dube, it is said that the government is failing to pay outstanding salaries and bonuses.
We have spoken to the other universities. They've actually addressed their staff, the representatives there, which they have confirmed that staff have dismissed, they've gone home. They are waiting for their salaries while they are in their homes. We are incapacitated. We have no money to go to work. For past fares, pay our rent hasn't been paid.
What is the problem?
What we hear after engaging the two parent ministries is that the government is finding difficult to mobilize resources to pay staff.
So now, does it mean that the government doesn't have money to pay staff?
We can summarily say so, that government is broke now. It is no money.
Since you have decided to actually withdraw your services by claiming that you don't have money to go to work, what is going to happen next?
The employer finds the money and then deposits it into people's accounts. People report for work, but there is another issue which is outstanding. The people haven't been paid the 2014 the bonus. Money is paid around November or December. The investors, if it continues like this, will be closed forever. That's what it means, because the people cannot continue coming to work and then they are not paid.
And give us a little background about what is happening today. Is it a reflection of what you have been trying to negotiate with government?
We experienced it sometime last year from March that the salaries were coming in the following month. People were getting a salary of a month in the following month around 7th or 5th or 7th. And then this year from January, it has been now coming around 12 to 15. And you can see today is 16.
That was Reid Ford Dube, president of the Zimbabwe Universities and Allied Workers Union, speaking with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube from Bulawayo.
Lawyers representing human rights activist and freelance journalist Itai Dzamara are tomorrow expected to start visiting all official police and prison holding cells as the search for the missing activist intensifies a week after his alleged abduction in Glenview suburb in Harare. But some human rights activists say the search might be doomed since the court did not allow them to look also into secret military and central intelligence detention cells. Officer Commanding CID Law and Order Division Detective Assistant Commissioner Crispin Makedenge was put in charge of the investigation to locate Dzamara.
The police over the weekend appealed to members of the public on radio and newspapers to give them information that may be key in finding Dzamara. Acting Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa called Dzamara's alleged kidnapping as barbaric. I quote Judge Deputy Mangota ordered the state last week to search for Dzamara and ensure his safety return to his family. One of Dzamara's lawyers, Alec Mchadehama, tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that the searches will likely begin tomorrow.
As you know, we obtained an order for the police to allow us, in conjunction with themselves, to go and search at prescribed detention centers. So what we intend to do is to meet the police tomorrow so that we make arrangements to go there either tomorrow or the day after tomorrow.
By prescribed detention centers, what exactly are you referring to?
We are referring to those constitutional places where people may be detained after they have been arrested, like police cells, prison cells, and other prescribed detention cells like court holding cells. Those are normally places that are prescribed as detention centers.
What about those that are not prescribed? We've heard of some in Goromonzi, some places near the airport.
Unfortunately, we have no way of knowing of the existence of such places. As you know, those are not prescribed, so the court could not grant an order, which is uncertain as to where we might go, because as you might know, I think the security agents have got various other secret houses where they can detain people, like what happened in the case of Justina Mkuku and others in 2009. But those were not covered in terms of the order. Those are covered by the need for the police to intensify searches at whatever other places where they might suspect Itai Dzamara is hidden or has been held in a communicado.
One of Dzamara's lawyers, Alec Mchadehama, a member of the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights, speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare.
Meanwhile, Dzamara's family today held a press conference to dispel rumors that the activist had gone into voluntary hiding to seek media attention. His brother, Patson Dzamara, tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that the disappearance is putting a strain on the family.
And the reason why he actually decided on that was pretty much due to the fact that there's been a lot of stories doing the rounds, especially on social media, and we found it, or we thought it was actually expedient and necessary for us as a family to break our silence and speak from our own standpoint as to what we understand and know actually happened as far as the time missing is concerned.
What do you know up to this point?
Well, we certainly know everything to the point of his abduction, but as it pertains to his fate after the abduction.
If there's someone out there who might be holding Itai or who might know his whereabouts, what message do you want to send to that person or those persons?
Well, we're just appealing to their conscience for them to release our brother, our son, our father, as it were. That's just our appeal to whoever is holding Itai. Itai has a family, and the family looks up to him. As such, we are really appealing to whoever is holding Itai to come forward or to release him. We're appealing to their conscience.
And that was Itai Dzamara's brother, Patson Dzamara, speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare.
Meanwhile, Dzamara's disappearance has raised tensions in Harare, forcing the government to deploy heavily armed police officers in the city center and put the majority of the force on high alert. Zimbabweans in London and South Africa upped pressure on the government to locate Dzamara by demonstrating over the weekend. The US, EU, and several Western countries and human rights groups have all called on the government to find Dzamara.
Video footage of President Robert Mugabe appearing in official meetings with his daughter Bona Mugabe Chikore in Japan today sparked a firestorm on Twitter, with some asking in what capacity did she travel and who picks the tab. In one footage, Mr. Mugabe is shown flanked by Bona and his Foreign Affairs Minister Simbarashe Mbengegui during what was said to be an official meeting with Japanese Prime Minister. The president is in Japan for a conference on disaster reduction. His entourage includes Health Minister David Parirenyatwa, Environment Minister Xavier Kasukwere, as well as Local Government Minister Ignatius Chombo. The MDCT expressed outrage on the Bona issue and said it was going to demand answers from the government. Reporter Ntungamili Nkomo reached party spokesman Obet Gutu.
Mugabe has privatized the state. Robert Mugabe thinks that he is Zimbabwe personified. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to know that Bona Mugabe jamboree to the Far East, to Japan in particular, is a state-funded excursion. It is obvious that she has traveled there at the cost of the state. It is also very startling and absolutely surprising that she has been attending official meetings with Japanese officials as if she is part of the official delegation of ministers and other senior government officials from Zimbabwe. This doesn't surprise us because Robert Mugabe is keen on creating a dynasty in this country where himself, his wife, his sons, and now his daughter are strategically placing themselves to take over the levers of state power.
Are you, as the opposition, going to seek clarity from the government?
From my own personal investigations with the relevant officials at Treasury, I can confirm here and now that that trip has been funded by the state. But of course, as the country's official opposition, we'll be making the relevant inquiries.
MDCT spokesman Obet Gutu on the line from Harare. Foreign Ministry's Permanent Secretary Mike Bima was unreachable for comment.
At least 15 candidates will tussle it out in ZANU-PF primary elections ahead of a by-election to replace the party's former administration secretary, Didmus Mutasa. Acting ZANU-PF Manicaland chairperson Samuel Undenge says the interest to represent the party in the by-election to fill the seat, which was declared vacant following Mutasa's expulsion from ZANU-PF, shows ZANU-PF is regaining its popularity. The opposition MDCT says it will not field a candidate in this and other by-elections expected to be held this year until tangible electoral reforms have been made. Correspondent Lloyd Amoyo has the story.
Ms. Tundenge says candidates will be vetted before the party can select its official candidate in primary elections ahead of the nomination court that will sit in Mutare on April 8th. The election to fill the vacant post is set for the 10th of June.
Election in Headlands constituency, where Didmus Mutasa was, as you know, he has been expelled from ZANU-PF party and he has also been recalled from parliament. So that necessitates a by-election. This morning I was in Rusape meeting with the aspiring candidates.
Many in the constituency cannot believe that Didmus Mutasa, a former confidant of President Robert Mugabe and known for the longest time the political godfather of Manicaland province, is now an ordinary man without any political clout after spending almost his whole adult life with ZANU-PF. Undenge, who is also the Energy and Power Development Minister, says judging by the many people wanting to have their name on the ballot paper representing ZANU-PF in the election shows how the party's popularity is on the rise.
To me, it was an expression that now people like ZANU-PF more than ever before. We have never had such a situation where we have 15 candidates expressing to stand for ZANU-PF.
The MDCT's Manicaland provincial spokesperson, Trevor Sarwaka, says his party, as stated before, will not field candidates in by-elections until key electoral reforms have been put in place. Mutasa has gone to the Constitutional Court to challenge ZANU-PF's decision to recall him and the manner in which the party's December Congress was held. Some of the 15 ZANU-PF candidates interested in the Headlands parliamentary seat include former Manicaland Governor and Resident Minister Tinayachi Gudu, acting Manicaland War Veterans Leader Nation Madongorere, Provincial Party members Chris Chingosho, Albert Nyakwezwa, Elizabeth Makoni, Nathaniel Miripiri, and Dakarai Mapuranga, among others. It is not yet clear which other political parties will jostle for the Headlands seat. Meanwhile, the MDCT Manicaland Provincial Chair David Chimini says his party has set its focus on increasing grassroots membership support. Chimini says the MDCT wants to have at least 16,000 registered members in each of the 26 constituencies in the province. He says the party is embarking on a door-to-door membership drive, ensuring supporters get identity documents to ensure they can register as voters ahead of the 2018 polls.
We have employed what we are calling door-to-door campaign at the village level. We are not forcing anybody to come and join us because this is a polling station based. So it is possible for us to make sure that we work towards a certain figure. Like I'm saying, each constituency must give us 16,000 voters.
Chimini says his party is guaranteed of success if it manages to have 16,000 registered members in each constituency as voters. The MDCT chair says he's confident with the release of the electronic voters' roll, the party is now in a position to know who is a voter and who is not.
Encourage unity of purpose so that by the time we come to the elections, we form the next government.
He adds the MDCT is happy with the progress being recorded on the ground in terms of getting as many people as possible to register as voters. Reporting for Studio 7, this is Reda Moyo.
Meanwhile, the MDCT says it is at least happy that the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission, or ZEC, has finally invited it to collect copies of the voters' rolls for Mount Darwin West and Chirumanzu Sibagwe ahead of by-elections expected in the two constituencies to replace former Vice President Joyce Mujuru and Deputy President Emmerson Mnangagwa. The by-elections are expected to be held on the 27th of this month. Party spokesman Obet Gutu told Studio 7 that they will not get into any elections before any significance of the voters' roll, even though this party is not fielding candidates in the polls, is tangible.
Yes, I can confirm to the millions of listeners, Jonga, that our Secretary General, Douglas Mundora, was actually invited by the chairperson of the ZEC, Justice Richard Makarau, late last week to come and collect the voters' rolls for the Chirumanzu, Zimbabwe, and the Mount Darwin West constituencies. What we are yet to find out is whether these are both the electronic and the hard copy version. But even if they are both electronic and hard copy version, it doesn't mean that if we are given those voters' rolls, we are now home and dry. We still have to take those rolls to our computer experts who are going to unpack and unravel the electronic version in particular, to find out whether it is legitimate, whether it is correct, whether it is accurate. This is just but the beginning of what is going to be a very long, long process in trying to even up the electoral playing field in Zimbabwe.
In the event that you are satisfied, are you going to participate in the upcoming by-elections?
I can confirm that for the March 27 by-elections, we are already too late because the nomination court for the two constituencies have already set.
That was MDCT spokesman Obet Gutu in Harare.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
Coming up,
Michael Cariati tells us why Highlanders fans are finally smiling.
But before the Highlanders smiles, we'll take a look at regional and international news.
A United Nations panel investigating Eritrea says it has found very clear patterns of human rights violations and a total absence of the rule of law in the country.
Hundreds of Pakistani minority Christians rallied in the eastern city of Lahore, blocking roads and shouting slogans in a second day of protests against the twin suicide bombings outside two churches in the city that left 15 people dead.
And Russian President Vladimir Putin appeared in public today following days of rumors that he was either ill, had died, or been ousted in a palace coup.
And in our health segment today, Marvelous Mhlanganyahuye speaks with Zimbabwe's ambassador to Senegal and the Gambia, Trudy Stevenson, whose husband struggled with Alzheimer's disease, a little-known disease in the country.
My first word is to be humanitarian, to be humane, and to love that person. I mean, my husband was my partner, and obviously I loved him to bits. And when we first discovered, both of us, because we both went to the analysis and the tests and so on, when we both discovered it, it was a shock for both of us. And at the time, Jim was still able to appreciate what was happening. We were told, and I remembered right up until he died early this year, that they did say that this person will become somebody else in looking after him. I was very lucky that I was able to afford a Zimbabwean carer who came with us to Senegal, and we brought Wadzi with us, a Zimbabwean who is the most compassionate, well-trained, English-speaking person who completely related to Jim and became part of our family.
Someone out there who's listening may actually not even know that this is Alzheimer's. What should they look out for?
There are two types of Alzheimer's. There's the fast type, which happens in one time you notice that there's extreme hyperactivity, confusion, loss of memory, and strange behavior. And within a year, about that person is dead. My husband had it for about 8 years before he died. But when I took him for a test, the reason that I took him was that he had become increasingly forgetful, let's say, but we had a disastrous holiday in the UK. We went to the UK, and I think it was 2008, to have a holiday together, and he lost several very expensive things that cost both him and me a lot of time and money. He lost his Visa card. He left his wallet in a telephone booth in London. And fortunately, whoever it was who found the wallet in the phone booth, there was a telephone number or something, and he managed to get hold of Jim. Then he went down to meet his daughter in Devon. Somehow he left his video camera, which was a very expensive camera, on the train. And amazingly, somebody had simply handed it in to the lost property there in Penzance. We get to London Airport, to the Heathrow, to the duty-free. He buys a new, very expensive digital video camera, and they call our flight, and we go off and we get in. And as we're sitting down on the plane, he says, "Oh, but where's my camera?" He's left it in, shop. And so when I get back to Harare, this little adventure has cost several thousand pounds. And I think, no, there must be something actually wrong with him. He's not just doing it to annoy me. He's not just forgetful. There's seriously something wrong. We went together to my GP, and she asked him a few questions, referred us to St. Giles, actually, where they do an assessment. And it was there that the psychiatrist said, "Look here, all the evidence points to Alzheimer's."
And was there any treatment that you were offered, or how did it progress from there?
No, there's no real treatment. Alzheimer's is one of these things. Eventually, we did start the Aricept. There's a very good and active association in Zimbabwe called ZADA, which it stands for Zimbabwe Alzheimer's and Related Diseases Association. And would recommend anyone who is in Zimbabwe or who has a relative in Zimbabwe who may be confused or losing memory or have lost the memory or maybe they just think they might be. Who, I mean, Jim used to do things like put his wallet in the freezer. Strange things like that. These are indications that your brain links are not working properly anymore. Please contact ZADA.
And that was Zimbabwe's ambassador to Senegal and the Gambia, Trudy Stevenson, sharing her experiences during her husband's fight against Alzheimer's disease. He succumbed to the disease early this year.
In our sports segment, Highlanders fans have for some time now become the butt of jokes in beer halls and other entertainment places as their team failed to deliver or froze just before crossing the finishing line. But as Michael Cariati reports, the Bosa fans can now afford to smile.
The Bulawayo Giants had an indifferent 2014 soccer season, finishing way in 5th place, much to the agony of long-suffering fans. 3 weeks ago, the team was knocked out of the Bob 91 Super Cup by Capes United. But this time around, they can afford a smile. Barcelona are through to the final of the Zimbabwe National Army Charity Shield after a goal from Thomas Shideu gave them 1-0 victory over neighbors Haumain yesterday. This is Highlanders' first recognizable win for some time, and coach Bongani Mafu is a relieved man. He hopes the win is an omen for good things to come.
It's a good omen for the future. I hope it sticks with us.
Highlanders will now meet Dynamos in this year's final of the Zimbabwe National Army Commander's Charity Shield after Dimbare overcame bitter rivals Capes United also yesterday. Despite the win, Dimbare coach Dave Mangora is not satisfied. He says a lot needs to be done if Dynamos are to acquire the shape he requires.
We won the game, but we've got quite a lot of things that we should improve on.
Capes United, Dynamos Highlanders and Haumain were also using the Zimbabwe National Army Charity Shield to fine-tune their teams ahead of the start of the season. Premier Soccer League Chief Executive Officer Kenneth Ndebele has revealed the league program will kick off this Friday.
On Friday, the 20th of March 2015, with Harare City FC playing against Cholocho FC at Tufaro Stadium.
However, FC Platinum will kick off their season not in the best of moods. Zimbabwe's representative in Pan-African football were yesterday thumped 5-1 by Young Africans of Tanzania in a CAF Confederations Cup first round, first leg game. The Zimbabweans will need a massive 4-0 win at home in 2 weeks' time to sail through to the next round of the competition. That aside, the Zimbabwe cricket team is returning home after stuttering to a 6-wicket defeat to India in their last World Cup game for their 5th loss in 6 games. But Captain Brendan Taylor benefited greatly from that World Cup extravaganza.
Thank you, Kariati. And finally, Ugandan activist Victor Ochen has been nominated for the 2015 Nobel Peace Prize and at 33 is Africa's youngest nominee ever. The American Friends Service Committee nominated him and his organization, the African Youth Initiative Network, for their work with war victims in northern Uganda. In an interview with VOA's Swahili service, Ochen, a social activist from northern Uganda, said the announcement, the Nobel Peace Prize nomination, was a dream call.
On the peak of the war, there's been so much challenges and people lost hope. People were thinking, would we ever be able to see a new life again? It was difficult to believe in, but I'm happy that from the north, where it's been the hardest life, something good has come out of it. At least it's a recognition that living in the camp, living as a refugee, does not mean all hope is gone. You can still build up something from there.
Victor Ochen of Northern Uganda is one of the 2015 Nobel Peace Prize nominees.
Now remember to stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our host will discuss with experts and you, the listeners, about the conditions in Zimbabwe's prisons following Friday's riots and death.
And now to recap today's top stories.
More than 10,000 workers in Zimbabwe state universities down their tools.
That's our broadcast this evening. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele. This is Jonga Kandemiri in Washington.
And I'm Chris Gande, wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night.